Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link. It's Monday, the 26th of March, 2018. I'm Wanjiko Mwaura.
And I am Abubakar Jalo. We are coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany.
In today's edition, violence mars the elections in Sierra Leone as High Court lifts its injunction on the Election Commission.
The SLPP say they would go on the streets if the court decided otherwise today.
And in Nigeria, over 100 girls who were kidnapped in the town of Dapchi have returned home. But what does this mean for the Abuja's possible ceasefire negotiation with Boko Haram?
So this new stance is simply, I think, a recognition of the fact that the group still remain a real threat and that the military response has shown its limitations and its ability to get rid of that movement.
Those stories and a lot more coming up shortly.
But first, let's hear what's been happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Several EU countries, including Germany, have expelled dozens of Russian diplomats as part of a coordinated effort that also includes the U.S. ordering 60 Russians to leave the United States. The move comes after Russia was accused of a poison attack earlier this month in Salisbury, England, that targeted former Russian double agent Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia. Lithuania's Foreign Minister Linas Linkevičius said the effort to condemn Russia strengthens NATO and the EU.
It's not something which should matter just for UK. It's a challenge for all international community, for NATO, for European Union. And definitely we have to do that most to show this solidarity with our allies.
Moscow has denied any responsibility and has expelled dozens of EU and US diplomats in retaliation. Catalonian ex-president Carles Puigdemont has been detained on a European arrest warrant in the northern German state of Schleswig-Holstein. Puigdemont's lawyer said he was arrested after trying to re-enter Belgium, where he has been staying since fleeing Spain following a failed independence bid. German government spokesman Stephen Stefford said that Puigdemont's extradition fate would be decided by local German courts.
Spanien ist ein demokratischer Rechtsstaat.
Spain is a democratic state under the rule of law, and the German government remains convinced that this Catalonia conflict must be resolved within the Spanish legal and constitutional order. And for this reason, we have supported the clear position of the Spanish government to ensure this legal and constitutional order in recent months.
Dieser Rechts- und Verfassungsordnung auch unterstützt.
Catalan lawyers have protested against his detention. Egyptians have begun voting in presidential elections, casting their ballots amid tightened security to choose between incumbent president Abdel Fattah el-Sisi and his only challenger, Musa Mustafa Musa. Critics have argued against the legitimacy of the vote, noting that previous presidential challengers were forced out of the election, giving el-Sisi a more than sizable chance at winning. El-Sisi is seeking a second four-year term. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Sierra Leone's High Court overturned a ruling to delay the second round of the presidential election, saying instead that the vote can go ahead as planned. A member of Samora Kamara's ruling party had alleged fraud in last week's runoff vote against opposition leader Julius Maada Bio. Sierra Leone's Electoral Commission has asked the court to postpone the second round. The request has not yet been granted. South Africa's former president Jacob Zuma is due to appear in court in early April to face charges of corruption. The National Prosecuting Authority said it would prosecute Zuma on 16 charges, including fraud, racketeering, and money laundering. Zuma has repeatedly denied any wrongdoing. And now in sports, Brazil will face off against Germany tonight for the first time since losing 7-1 in the 2014 World Cup semifinals. The international friendly game will take place in Berlin. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
You are listening to Africa Link Live. I'm Wanjiku Mwaura.
And I am Abubakar Jalo. And we are also on Facebook, so leave us your comments there. We will get to them whenever we can.
For sure. Now, we begin in Sierra Leone, where a high court has lifted its injunction on the Electoral Commission, allowing it to carry out its preparations for tomorrow's election runoff.
Now, this whole thing started over the weekend when the same court issued a temporary injunction on presidential runoff polls, which is scheduled for tomorrow, March the 27th. Earlier, I spoke to our correspondent in Freetown, Claudia Anthony, about the court's decision.
Well, a lawyer of the incumbent party had gone to court challenging the results of the election, asking for forensic examination of the results and also examination of the NEC commission itself, its internal structures, and the electoral commissioner himself. And based on that, this person asked for an injunction to stop the runoff elections that were scheduled for tomorrow.
So how did opposition supporters of the Sierra Leone People's Party respond to this decision?
They were unhappy about it. We were on the streets yesterday because it was the last day of the scheduled campaigns for both political parties that are going into the presidential runoff elections. And it was the day for the SLPP to campaign, and we were on the streets talking to the supporters. And they say they will go on the streets if the court decided otherwise today. That's because earlier their leader had said that in case, in the event, the runoff elections are deferred by the courts, he would call on Sierra Leoneans to demand democracy and to demand peace.
Does a high court in Sierra Leone have a jurisdiction to try a matter of national interest? And an individual lawyer can halt a process that also concerns the rest of the country.
These issues you've just brought up, basically how the court started on Saturday. Interestingly, a day that the court doesn't sit in Sierra Leone is Saturday. The first one was about whether or not an individual, let's forget about if it's a lawyer or not, an individual has the right to bring up a matter against the state regarding national issues. And the High Court ruled that individual, no matter what, has the, and I quote, bona fide rights to, and unquote, to take not only the government of Sierra Leone, but also an institution of government to court. The court also said they had the jurisdiction to try this case. You have other legal experts saying that, I mean, it is a case for the Supreme Court because it is a constitutional matter that has to do with the presidency. So they thought it would have been at the Supreme Court rather than the High Court. But the High Court has gone ahead and has made the decision. And there was jubilation from some sections around the court. And there was disappointment, on the other hand, from some other parts of society.
That was DW's correspondent in Freetown, Claudia Anthony. Now, Wanjiku, I understand we have a couple of responses to this.
Yes, indeed. Bayer Jeremiah wrote on our Facebook page, "I pray and hope that the Electoral Commission is fully ready in terms of the logistics, personnel, and transparent, credible, and acceptable processes leading to the runoff."
Now, we have a response from Alfred Laita Bangura. He said, "The National Electoral Commission need to know that the judiciary is active. They will not feel like doing anything and goes court-free."
And another one here from Alhaji Kamara, who says, "This man is a real Democrat brigadier. Mada Bio, we are with you. No more 1 Petit for Life."
Sounds like an SLPP supporter there.
Absolutely.
And before we go to the next story, just a quick information there. The people are not so sure that the elections will happen tomorrow because of this injunction that delayed the election commission from carrying out its activities.
Yes, and like we had from Bayer Jeremiah, who says they hope that it will be credible and acceptable processes before tomorrow. Now we move on to a developing story. Germany has joined the countries rallying behind the US in the unfolding Russian drama by expelling four Russian diplomats. The United States and its European allies have expelled dozens of Russian diplomats in a coordinated action against Moscow, which they accuse of poisoning an ex-spy in Britain.
Now, DW's Terry Schulz spoke to our correspondent, Simon Young in Germany, and Claire Richardson in Washington. Simon Young starts by explaining the situation here in Germany. Take a listen.
Four diplomats from the Russian embassy in Berlin are being sent home, of about around 100 in total. They've been told that they have to leave within the next 7 days. And, of course, like other governments, the German government has said that it is acting in concert with its European and NATO partners because it says, you know, what it sees as an attack from Russia cannot go unanswered.
Well, let's go to Claire in Washington for the response there. Claire, 60 Russian diplomats, I understand, stationed in the U.S. are being expelled. What sort of message is the White House trying to send with this?
Well, the White House has released a statement today saying that this expulsion is meant to reduce Russia's ability to spy on Americans and to operate in ways that threaten American national security. And it's quite clearly a show of support for the United Kingdom with its special relationship there and NATO partners, as Simon mentioned. It's also somewhat of an about-face for the Trump administration. If you'll remember, it was just a week ago that Trump had called Vladimir Putin to congratulate him on his election win. That was against all the advice of his aides. But it's also not the first time that we've seen expulsions of suspected Russian intelligence officers in the United States. Obama in late 2016 expelled 35 Russians in response to meddling in the U.S. elections. But this is certainly the largest number we've seen in decades, perhaps since the mid-80s when Reagan expelled roughly the same number as we're seeing today.
That was Claire Richardson and Simon Young speaking to DW's Terry Schulz. Now we move on back to Africa. Nigeria's government is in talks with the Islamist militant group Boko Haram about a possible ceasefire with the ultimate aim of securing a permanent cessation of hostilities. This is the latest from the country's information minister, Lai Mohammed.
It is the first time in years that the government has said it's talking to Boko Haram about a ceasefire. Earlier, I spoke to William Asanvo, a security expert from the Institute of Security Studies in Abidjan. He started by helping us understand what to make of the new developments.
I think it's not new that despite the different claims by the Nigerian federal government about Boko Haram having been technically defeated or not holding any inch of the national territory, the group has demonstrated its resilience and its ability to keep on mounting attack. So this new stance is simply, I think, a recognition of that, of the fact that the group still remain a real threat and that the military response has shown its limitations and its ability to get rid of that movement.
We know in 2019 Nigeria is heading to elections. Do you think this is a political maneuver by President Buhari ahead of the elections?
Yes, I think it may also be interpreted as an attempt by the current administration ahead of February 2019 general election to score a significant success in dealing with an insurgency that has been raging for almost a decade now.
And how big a success is this for the Buhari administration?
Yes, I think succeeding in having a cessation of hostilities would be a significant development in the efforts to address the Boko Haram threat. But the cessation of hostilities cannot be an end in itself. It needs to be the first step towards, for instance, a negotiation of a sustainable peace. But it remains to be seen whether first the cessation of hostilities will be achieved and what would be the agenda for the peace talks to have with the group. The other aspect is the fact that the Boko Haram has been a regional threat. So what is the position of neighboring countries with regard to the cessation of hostilities and with the different talks that will be engaged? Are they going to be part of it? So there are many questions that remain to be answered with regard to that development.
That was William Asanvo, a security expert from the Institute of Security Studies in Abidjan.
Now on Facebook, we post the question, could the talks end the Boko Haram insurgency in northeastern Nigeria? Lots of responses for Njiko.
Yes, indeed. I see some of them coming in.
Yeah, one from Jimmy Fligarian, who says, permanent cessation of hostilities may mean that Boko Haram will become an institution in Nigeria. But it is the same Boko Haram they claim have been defeated. Nigeria is in wrong hands.
And I see one Abel D. Don who's listening live. And he asks, how can Buhari say he wants to negotiate with Boko Haram?
And also live there on our Facebook page, we have Ben Humble, who said, what Nigeria has presently is an advanced corruption of the highest level. APC is simply all politicians criminal. Well, that is a conception there of the party.
Yes, indeed. And Bar Emeka says, DW Africa, please do not believe on anything that comes from Nigerian government because they are so deceitful. Those are strong words from Bar Emeka.
Thanks for all your responses. Keep it Africa Link.
You're listening to Africa Link with me, Wanjiku Mwaura.
And I am Abubakar Jalo. Many thanks for joining us here live on Facebook as well.
Coming up in this half of Africa Link, we listen to how residents of a village in eastern DR Congo have been severely affected by a recurring banana tree disease.
When it ravaged our fields, engineers who have studied this disease came. They told us to cut any banana stem with symptoms, and the machete used to cut down such stems shouldn't touch any other banana stem before its sterilization. That helped us.
And remember, we are watching your responses on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Well, before we go to all of those stories we have lined up for you in the second half, results from Cameroon's senatorial election indicate that the ruling CPDM party of Cameroon's President Paul Biya indicate that the party has won 67 of the 70 seats in Sunday's election. The main opposition, SDF, won 7 seats in the elections that experienced disturbances from armed separatists fighting for independence in the English-speaking regions. Moki Kinseka reports now from Yaoundé.
Cameroon's elections management body, ELECAM, says initial results put the ruling CPDM party in the lead, winning 63 out of the 70 elective Senate seats. The opposition SDF party won the remaining 7 seats in the English-speaking Northwest region. The SDF had 14 seats in the last Senate. If the results are confirmed, the loss of 7 seats will mean the SDF won't be able to effect any change under the crushing CPDM majority. Ngum Petra, a political science student at the University of Yaoundé 1, says the outcome doesn't come as a surprise.
There's nothing to write home about. The CPDM has the knife and the yam and win all the elections so far as Pobia is there.
The CPDM party controls 80% of the electoral college, which is made up of about 10,000 municipal councillors. Before the elections, the opposition SDF had been calling on councillors to vote on consciences, not along party lines. Professor Kofele Kale, who heads the opposition SDF party list for the English-speaking Southwest region, says Biya's party intimidated voters.
I can confirm that councillors have been threatened, and so each one is looking out for himself.
Abdoulaye Babale, a senior ELECAM official, says armed English-speaking separatists tried to stop voters from casting their ballots, claiming that Cameroon could not be organizing an election in a state they had created called Ambazonia.
We had disturbances in the Southwest region and the Northwest region because some voters are afraid for their movement for the security reasons.
Paul Atanganji, Minister of Territorial Administration, says disturbances reported at polling stations in the English-speaking regions were too minor to have impact on the outcome of the election.
Voting was effectively carried out in all the 58 divisional headquarters. Generally, voting was done in an atmosphere of order, calm, serenity. No major incident or event was recorded, such as to impede on the sincerity and transparency of the current elections. Special security measures were taken all over the nation.
Issa Chiruma Bakari, president of the National Salvation Front Party, who went for the election alongside 8 other opposition political parties, says although he won no seats, he has learned a lesson.
We have crossed the Rubicon of 10%. This is a clear indication that we have been successful in convincing people to cast their ballot in favor of the party. It is encouraging We are determined to move forward.
After the proclamation of the results of the election, the Constitution gives President Biya the power to appoint 30 other senators to make up a total of 100. Analysts say this helps him to control all lawmakers, since he appoints only people loyal to him.
DW correspondent Moki Kinseka reporting from Yaounde.
And I see you, Eriko Njombos, who has just commented on our Facebook page saying, before any election is conducted in Cameroon, we already know the winners and the political party.
Interesting there. We have Blasio, who says, even if a new emerging president calls for a constitutional reform, how possible can this be taken into context in this majority?
Health check.
Well, Abu, it's a good thing that ripe bananas are so easy to eat, eh?
I love bananas.
And they are a good source of potassium, vitamins A, C, and B6, fiber, and antioxidants. I mean, all this goodness. But these health benefits are gradually becoming less attainable in North Kivu province in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Now, wilt bacteria is a disease attacking banana trees, has resurfaced again after its eradication in the past few years. Gaius Kuwene visited the village that's been affected by this and sent us this report.
As the sun is setting on Lake Kivu, an elderly man wearing a black hat walks in his field of bananas in Bweremana, 25 kilometers from Goma, the provincial capital of North Kivu. Jovite Balera is showing at banana trees touched by wilt bacteria, a plant disease that dries out the male bud and causes premature ripening of the banana plant's fruits, making it impossible to consume or commercialize the product. In the 60s, a migrating bird called Kayao brought this disease from Latin America to Ethiopia before bringing it to eastern DRC's village of Bwere in Masisi territory in 2004. At that time, Catholic Graben University noted that banana trees covered 70% of land in North Kivu province. Jovite Balera says wilt bacteria changed everything.
When it ravaged our fields, engineers who have studied this disease came. They told us to cut any banana stem with symptoms, and the machete used to cut down such stems shouldn't touch any other banana stem before its sterilization. That helped us.
Researchers by the Ministry of Agriculture and the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization estimated the loss of banana production up to 27% for farmers and more than $2,000 per household in a year due to wilt bacteria. That's when DRC started importing banana from Rwanda. The return of this bacteria in North Kivu is affecting the livelihoods of farmers like Jenine.
We used to have banana trees and depended on them, but they were all cut down and we can't have new ones. That's the problem. We try to replace banana trees by cabbage and potatoes, but it's not working.
Apart from this economic consequence, the reappearance of wilt bacteria disturbed also the social coexistence in villages, as Kambia Kahombo explains.
It started creating conflict among people, thinking that their neighbors bewitched their banana trees. But now that we see it almost everywhere, people crying, we have understood that it's a general problem.
Mwenda Ovio Charles, representative of banana producers, believes he has found a natural way to cure wilt bacteria. He has been experimenting this method for 4 years in a regional laboratory and shares his secret.
Mix human urine and some local herbs, pour it on the stump of the infected banana tree to disinfect it. I'm just waiting for permission from authorities to spread this remedy to banana producers.
With this, North Kivu banana farmers hope to definitely get rid of wilt bacteria and regain their prosperity.
Eunice Wanjiro presented that report by Gaius Kowene from North Kivu province in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
And now let's talk about football, because it's a Monday and we can't go without football. Some international friendlies are currently underway, and defending World Cup champion Germany played Spain over the weekend that ended in a draw. Chuck Penfold from DW Sports Desk was in the studio with me.
Well, the main thing that we're looking ahead to here in Germany is Germany's friendly against Brazil tomorrow night in Berlin. They played to a 1-1 draw against Spain on Friday, which was saved by a goal there. The good thing for Germany is they've chosen a couple of really good teams to play their last internationals before the head coach, Joachim Löw, has to pick his provisional squad on May 15th.
So would you say Brazil chose Germany to get over their trauma from last World Cup?
That's a good question. I don't know how these things are actually arranged. I do know that the Brazilians have been talking the last few days a lot about this sort of trauma of that 7-1 game in 2014. I think, you know, the coach has sort of talked about maybe exercising a demon, or, you know, maybe we won't have to talk about this if we maybe even beat Germany, but certainly have a good performance in Berlin. That's the worst, actually, by the way, it's the worst they've ever lost. So I guess that's why.
Yeah, hopefully the Brazilians get over that. Let's talk a bit more about the Bundesliga. Bayern Munich, currently on the top of the table, is struggling to replace its coach. They've actually gone out for Thomas Tuchel.
You know, they pretty much should have known by, I guess it was October, when they fired Carlo Ancelotti and they brought in Jupp Heynckes, who was actually in retirement. He came out of retirement. But he said right from the start, look, I'm doing this as a friend of Bayern Munich, but I'm retired. I'll do this till the end of the season, but then it's over. You've got to find somebody else. And it seems to me like for the longest time, they were focused on the strategy of trying to convince Jupp to do it for another year when they should have been really looking for somebody else. They finally did decide on Tuchel, apparently, and spoke with him on Friday, and he said, no, basically, it's too late. I'm looking at other options. Now, some media have reported he actually said, I've signed with another team, which was thought to be Arsenal in England, but Bild-Zeitung, the biggest paper in Germany, came out today and said it looks like he's going to PSG as a Paris Saint-Germain.
Last week on Thursday, there was a decision in Hamburg, basically, about this rule, the 50+1 rule. What's all the deal behind this? Can you maybe explain to someone who doesn't understand what that means?
Yeah, the 50+1 is a rule in German football in the top two the professional leagues, that a club has to be owned by its membership, at least 50%. Now, we're talking about voting shares. 50% plus one vote, basically, so that no rich person from the Middle East or Russia, oligarch, whatever, can come in and take control of a club. It's seen as a more fan-friendly system. So you don't see an Abramovich, you know, who's got Chelsea coming in and buying it up, or the people from Qatar who bought up PSG. Or there's been several clubs in Britain. So, I mean, I'll come out. I'm in favor of 50+1. There are a couple of exceptions. There's Wolfsburg, Bayer Leverkusen.
Leipzig? RB Leipzig?
No, Leipzig comply with it, actually. It's hard. That's a complicated one to explain.
Well, it's quite hated because it's sort of cheating.
Yeah, but they, on paper, they comply with it. Because it has to be 50% of their fans. So what they've done is the only people who are fans are members are Leipzig employees. So I don't know, maybe they have 17 club members and they won't let anybody else in, but they've got control of it. So they comply with the rule.
And these are all people working for Red Bull.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. Thank you so much, Chuck.
No problem.
Chuck Penfold from DW Sports Desk.
With some pretty interesting insights there on Leipzig.
Indeed. Now, let's go back to Cameroon and to read some of your responses there. We have this response from Rodriguez, who said it's actually a surprise that the CPDM, that's President Paul Biya's party, did not score a 70 over 70 since majority of the councillors subscribes to that party.
And we have Fernando dos Santos, who says, if a dictator is manipulating elections to win 90%, then tell us how a party coalition can defeat him. Biya can never be removed from power by the ballot boxes.
And Bayer Jeremiah said, democracy is very expensive. It's difficult to get into democratic governance if you have power, drunk people in front of the desk.
And we also have more comments coming in on our live feed. Ayisi Jones says, in Cameroon, elections dates are fixed and organized by a presidential decree. The elections commissions is just a window dressing to help the government get more loans from external bodies so its ministers could embezzle.
And also another comment here on our Facebook page, that's DW Africa. It said there was no credible elections in Cameroon. Paul Biya's party is always the winning party on all elections held in Cameroon. That's one from Homeboy Elvis.
And we see you, Zoe Grace Rene, who says, I'm following live. Welcome. Where are you listening from? Tell us on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
And let me give you one from Nipi Hours, who says, I pity my fellow Francophones who label Anglophone terrorists, but live in trauma under beer and no way to voice their cowards.
Indeed. And that's all we have had time for today. My name is Wanjiku Mwaura.
And I'm Abubakar Jallow.